so that the majority could feel at ease. Because eventually, any things that will restrict.
Well, Sami Alarian, we're going to have to leave it there. We seem to have just lost the connection as well in this exclusive broadcast with Professor Sami Alarian, who has just been deported from the United States after years in jail and then under house arrest, though a Florida jury refused to convict him on any count against him. And I also want to thank Leila Alarian, his daughter, speaking to us from Washington, D.C. That does it for our broadcast. I'll be interviewing Cecile Richards on Wednesday night at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. Check our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berk, Renee Feldzahar, Mate Nermin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alfa, Fani Masood, Rabbi Karen, Dina Gezder, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford College. The station making waves. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today is February the 6th, 2015. My name is Jay Koronek. I'm the station advisor here at WHFR.FM. And we don't often mention it, but, if you do have any opinions or ideas for the show, or maybe want to suggest a guest, perhaps, we will consider. We only have an hour. We only have a particular format, but we will consider all ideas and all comments, especially those corrections, always very important to get the story straight. Yep. So how do you contact us? Well, just send an email to our general station email address, WHFR@HFCC, even though we dropped one from our name, .edu. WHFR@HFCC.edu. Put something about the WHFR Journal in your subject line, and that will then get transferred to me much more quickly than if you wouldn't. Okay? So that's where you can get your comments to us. Let's start taking a look at the news in the local area. Again, we're talking about Dearborn and the surrounding areas, usually based on the papers, but I have to say the last couple of weeks, with just two or three exceptions, since they don't have any local full-time reporters, they don't find out anything. Really. I mean, we cover the stories that are a little more important than the fires, explosions, who died, who had a crash on any particular day. That goes to all the local TV news stations. So why should they duplicate that in a printed edition, of course? But there's a lot of stories going on in education and government, and we usually don't see it. And in fact, a lot of stories, ooh, there was a big event somewhere. They didn't do the PSA before it, but they had some pictures afterwards. That's always fun, to see who was with whom and what they were wearing. But if it's really going to be a good event, you need to know in advance, I always thought. So today I'm doing a little bit of catch-up. We did catch-up last week, but there's still catch-up left. And some of the stories are very recent. I just got a copy this morning sent to me by email because I gave them my email address. City of Dearborn sent their newsletter for the month. To me and to anyone else that's on their list, of course, not just to me. And they have a few stories in there that are interesting, I think. So let's look at that first. What the heck? That's the most recent. Why not? But there's important stories that are not that recent that we didn't cover before. So let me continue. The first story in the City of Dearborn e-newsletter, and again, that is cityofdearborn.org, in case you want to go there directly yourself and sign up, is that, of course, you can order affordable trees through the city program beginning February 14th. Each tree costs $175 plus tax, and the supply of trees for the program is limited. Annual spring tree planting program is open to Dearborn residents only. Sorry about that. We have been designated, in fact, Tree City USA, which is a national program, for 27 years. And it was interesting to me a couple of years ago, I called the information desk at City Hall, and I said, are we still Tree City USA? Well, I don't know. Never heard of it. And they didn't know who to forward my call to. But somebody takes care of trees. In fact, I found out a little later that there's one person in Dearborn on staff, I think a part-timer, who is the tree person. That's her job, to plant trees, to provide trees, and so on. To place an order or to request a selection guide, and you can choose from an assortment of different trees that are appropriate, you can call the city. Of course, they're 313 and 943. 943 is their 313 extension for all the city offices. And the number is 2317-2317. So 313-943-2317 for ordering a tree for where? Not in your backyard, folks. These are trees between your sidewalk and your street. So if you don't have at least one tree there in your front yard, or maybe if you'd like a second one, I don't know. Anyway, you can request one. You can also go to their city website, which I just gave you. You remember? cityofdearborn.org. Yeah. cityofdearborn.com is a porn site, I believe still, so we can't use that one. Orders will not be taken by voicemail. So if you don't get any answer at the DPW phone line, that's what that 943-2317 is, leave a message with your name and phone number. Someone will call you back to take your order. So you need a real person if you're going to call over the phone. I'm not sure why that's the case, but I guess they want to make sure they get all the information. Sometimes those voicemail recordings are not very clear. Okay? They can't quite make out the words you're saying for a technical reason or some other reason. And they think planting of these trees will take place in late April, should be complete by the end of June. Nice service. You say, well, $175, that's a buku cash. Well, that's what it costs for an 8 to 10 foot high tree planted for you. So, the contractor who is chosen by the city is responsible for planting, mulching, staking, pruning, watering, and cleanup at the time of planting. Wow. Sounds impressive. Now, I live in a neighborhood where there is no sidewalks. There's no sidewalks in my neighborhood by intention of the design of the area. It's so-called New England plan. Not a gated community, folks. But no sidewalks. So guess what? No sidewalks to shovel in the wintertime. Just got to shovel out your driveway, of course, so you can get your car out after the city has plowed you in. That's always hilarious. I had 8 inches of snow, folks. I measured it on my driveway late Monday afternoon this week. You know, the big snowfall was done. Yeah, 8 inches. Now, for many of you, of course, there's blowing and drifting, and it might have piled up higher. But on my flat driveway that I had shoveled before, the snow fell. It was 8 inches. But at the end of my driveway, thanks to the plowing, I had literally over 2 feet, over 24 inches of snow, and it was 4 feet deep. That is, not just at the end of my driveway, but 4 feet up my driveway. That's the power of the street shoveling machines that the city uses. Big trucks, big push things on the front, whatever they're called. And, oh my gosh. You know, if they go real fast, too, they really blow that snow. And so I couldn't have got out of my drive, not because of the snowfall, but because of the city shoveling. Now, I admit, most of the streets, especially with little, blowing and piling up here and there, were not easy to get through. with those 8 inches of snow coming down. But I actually think, even though I have a small car and it's low to the ground and it's only does not have four-wheel drive, I could have got through without shoveling my local streets and my driveway. But because the city shoveled, I had a lot of trouble. Oh, and at the end of my street, and I live on a short street, so-called cul-de-sac or a dead-end street. Anyway, part of the design of the neighborhood. Yep, the city did the main part one time after they did the little side streets. So that means I had, yes, a 2-foot ridge of snow to plow my car through. I'm not going to shovel the city streets for them, excuse me. And I got stuck. But I'm just a little bit of rocking back and forth. Probably could have pushed it out myself. My car's that small. But nonetheless, it only held me up a while. But again, I really raised the question, certainly, about the plowing of our city residential streets. Most people want it, but it's more of an inconvenience to me, especially if I had a four-wheel drive vehicle. The city could save a ton of money as far as I'm concerned. But not everybody has four-wheel drive. And it does make people feel good to see the city out there doing stuff for them, even if it actually makes specific problems. And you know, every no good deed goes without some negative side effect, unfortunately. That means you've got to really work hard to get out of your driveway. And then even those cross streets, depending on how and when they did the plowing, will definitely have additional pileup when there's so much snow. So we all had to get out there and do our own shoveling. And I would have been happy to do my whole drive and into the street, but not after the city has done what they've done. That makes it extremely difficult. I have seen pictures about communities in Asia, like in China, and the people themselves come out and do the streets and the driveways and sidewalks in the areas ahead of them. Everybody does that, not just their sidewalks, not just their little driveway. They actually go out, and I know in their capital city, Beijing, everybody comes out with their little brooms. That's right, they don't use snow shovels. They just keep brooming away the snowflakes as they come down. Boy, that's a time-consuming thing. But they have cheap labor there, you know. But, okay. Bad joke. Sorry. Apologize to the Republic of China or whatever they're calling themselves these days. All I will say that when my car was stuck, it looked like two young kids in the neighborhood who live in the apartments near the residential homes. They were out there having great fun. Now, they weren't sledding or throwing snowballs. They were just using their arms and their bodies to brush off the snow from all the cars parked beside the street. They weren't asked to. They didn't have to do that. In fact, when they saw me get a little hung up on that snow drift there, they started coming over. And they're smiling and they're happy. I swear, one was only 8, the other's 9. And I guess my car qualified as small enough for them to have hope of pushing it out. But I waved them away because I was just in the final rock, just going back and forth, you know, and I knew it was going to hit it the next time. So, but public-spirited, isn't that great? Would you like to see more people like that? In the time of a little mini crisis or a problem, everybody comes out happy to help each other. That's so cool. That's wonderful. I wish it was more common. And I didn't even know these kids, right? I mean, it wasn't a matter of, oh, yeah, we talk every day, or I give them candy or something. No, I mean, they might think I'm a pervert or something to give kids candy, but certainly it would be bad for their teeth, everybody knows. Nonetheless, they just wanted to help. Of course, I was thinking there's only two of them. There could have been dozens of kids out there helping the people with their cars and their driveways for free, you know, just because it's fun. And everybody would be happy about it. But no, there was two little kids. And maybe their parents didn't even know, because maybe their parents would have, don't you dare get involved with those strangers. Or get run down on the streets. Oh, who knows? And of course, I'm making a lot of jokes here. So that's the Affordable Trees program with the commentary also. Remember, all opinions on this show are not necessarily those of those people here at Henry Ford College. Not necessarily. Okay. Snow emergency. It will be declared if only 3 inches of snow is expected in a short period of time. Okay. And if you don't move your car off the street after they announce it or you hear the siren, 80 buckaroos. Okay. You could be ticketed. They do have, of course, places in certain neighborhoods. If you think you're in a neighborhood, you have no place to move your car, you don't have a driveway and so on, contact the city and ask them, where do you put your car? And they will tell you where to go. Again, another pun, bad joke, not intended much. Dearborn has been selected for the Michigan Main Street program. What does that mean about streets? Well, they'll provide free training assistance centered on economic development. How to have a main street. You know, we supposedly used to have a main street, Michigan Avenue, in West Dearborn, and a main street area of businesses, community in East Dearborn. So how is that going these days? Well, we've lost a lot of businesses from West Dearborn along Michigan Avenue. A couple new ones have come in. East Dearborn, I don't think it's really strong on Michigan Avenue. Obviously, up one road north, Warren Avenue, is pretty busy with restaurants and businesses and all kinds of things going on. But so they're trying to give us training on how to access the technical resources available to figure out how to make a main street. Well, maybe we'll find out someday. Our library here in Dearborn, our public library, they're going to feature local scholars giving lectures. You know, they had film series, and it continues every now and then. But they've got people giving lectures, just like, well, Henry Ford College does on campus, but you don't find out about it much because it's advertised mostly on campus. And also U of M Dearborn, they have a lot of programs, and sometimes both the colleges get some of these events in the paper, but usually not all of them. Anyway, just give you a couple dates. Lectures begin at 7 p.m. and are offered at the Henry Ford Centennial Library. And that's on Michigan Avenue, of course. And they're calling the series the Armchair Academy, except you can't sit in your armchair. You got to go to their armchairs, that is, go to their auditorium there. Coming up on February 11th, and since today is the 6th, the 11th is next Wednesday. Boy, how quick am I? The Making of Arab Americans. Hani Bawardi, PhD from U of M Dearborn, is going to be talking about that history. February 25th, at the Centennial, King Arthur, Myth, History, or Legend? Presented by Rain Allison, PhD from U of M Dearborn. On March 11th, just to give you an idea how this is working out, Spiritual Trade, Religions of the Silk Road, presented by Pam Sayer at Henry Ford College. April 8th, Arab-Norman Cultural Exchange in Sicily, Islamic Visual Art in a 12th Century Christian Chapel. That's Hashim Al-Tawil. I'm sorry. I know you, Hashim. I haven't pronounced your last name much since I haven't been department head over there. Al-Tawil, PhD, and right from here at Henry Ford College. April 22nd, Polish women in Ravensbrück concentration camp in the response to Nazi medical experiments. I think we can guess how they responded. Not well. But Anna Mueller is going to go over that, PhD. She's PhD at U of M Dearborn. And on May 12th, Muslim gravestones in Southeast Michigan, presented by Ronald Stockton, PhD, U of M Dearborn. I bet that'd be interesting. I know one time I went to Arizona, okay, Tombstone, to be particular. And guess what? They had a cemetery in Tombstone. Yeah, right, full of tombstones. Yeah, but a lot of them were from the 19th century, and they put humorous epithets on them. Usually little rhyming things. And I can't remember all the funny ones, but I don't think that's prevalent too many other places in the country to put funny, pithy, witty epithets on a tombstone. But Muslim gravestones might be a very interesting side note to the history of Muslims in America. And I'm sure there's all kinds of things you can draw from his conclusions, too. So that's it's called the Armchair Academy at our Centennial Library. Another reason to get to your local public library a lot. You say, well, there's not much there. I don't know. I haven't been in a long time. Well, there you go. If you haven't been in a long time, you haven't seen all the new books, the new magazines, and the new services and special events like the Armchair Academy, at least at the main library, as we call it, the Centennial. So take a look at that. Free opening February 13th launches a Mayors of Dearborn exhibit at the Dearborn Historical Museum. And at the opening is going to be next Friday, February 13th. Yes, it's Friday the 13th, but it's always been a lucky day for me. Not so much for the Templars in France in the 14th century. But other than that, and I think there was some sort of Valentine's Day massacre, not the 13th, but the 14th, of course, that we remember from gangster history in the U.S. But nonetheless, it's going to talk about over the last 86 years, from 1929 to today, six men have governed Dearborn. And so they're going to give you backgrounds on everyone from Clyde Ford. That's right, it was a Ford, from 1929 to 1936. And you know, I don't know the answer to the question, was he related to the Ford family, the Ford automotive family? Pretty common name. Maybe he was a distant relative. Then there was John Kerry, 1936 to 1942, Orville Hubbard. Many of us still remember his reign, which continued from 42 through 78. John B. O'Reilly Sr., 79 to 86. Michael Guido, 86 to 2006. And, of course, currently John B. O'Reilly Jr., from 2006 up to the present. So we can learn about them by that special exhibit. And the opening is from 4 to 7 p.m. Maybe they'll have one former mayor there, because the others are no longer with us, I don't believe. Fairly sure of that. But that's a great exhibit. If you live in Dearborn, you should find out about our mayors. Oh, and visitors, get this, can even take a photo with a life-size cutout of Mayor Hubbard. Is that fun or what? And you could post that on your Facebook page and, wow, Instagram it, whatever. Mayor Arts Awards, which is always a big deal and an underappreciated area, the arts in a city, has been done for many years. This is the 27th annual Mayor's Arts Awards ceremony to be held. And this is going to be, the ceremony itself is Wednesday, February 11th, next week Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. in Studio A at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. We do want to especially bring attention to the fact that one of our own here at Henry Ford College, the head of the theater area, Dr. George Popovich, is going to be awarded the 2014 Arts Educator Award. George was on my show a couple months ago. We were talking about the virtual theater play Dinosaurus. That was a big deal last fall. And it was one of the many, many theater milestones and achievements that his career, which has spanned a couple decades here at Henry Ford College, things that he's achieved, and great educator, great teacher specifically, but also with, of course, the theater program that he's headed up since he came here. Now, a lot of people have been involved with him, and I'm sure he will thank a wide range of people in his speech, or not, perhaps. It takes a great person to keep a group going and motivated. But certainly a lot of people made contributions to that program here, and we've had a lot of them on the show, and so you know their names. I don't have to mention that. But congratulations, Dr. Popovich. You've deserved it for quite a while now. So I'm glad that somebody has nominated you. That's how it happens, folks. You have to be nominated. The other awards, just so you know the categories, Art Patron Award. Some company has given money to support an art program or artistic person. The Volunteer Award. Someone who's contributed their time for nothing. We've got 50-plus of those people around here at WHFR. Artist Performer Award. Arts Organization Award. The Mayor's Award, just, I guess, in general, the mayor saw somebody that's connected, I don't know, however. And the DCAC Bravo Award, because DCAC, the Dearborn Community Arts Council, is going to give a special award, since they know the 40-plus, or I guess maybe it's more than 40, maybe it's more than 60 now, nonprofit groups that are associated with them, all of which have art programs and do a variety of different things. So that's going to be a great program. It will start again at 7:30 p.m. next Wednesday, February 11th at 7:30 p.m. in the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, Michigan Avenue, of course, Dearborn. It's free. The public is welcome to come and celebrate with the honorees. Big auditorium. The evening is going to be hosted by Mike Mosley of the Dearborn Players Guild, and will include very special performances from the Renaissance Voices under the direction of Kevin Dewey, young up-and-coming vocalist Jade Reynolds, and Prism Tap Club, directed by Janine Boderi, or Boderi. And then afterwards, a reception across the hall at the Paduski Art Gallery. Padziewski? Well, sorry. One way or the other. But it's going to be a great time. It will be had by all, and I'll be in a WHFR meeting that night, so I can't go. But anyway, a great time will have by all. Thank it will be had by all, certainly. Okay, moving on here. You know, you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. 30 years we've been doing this, and we're just getting started. Yep, we're going to get better someday, somehow, I promise you. No, we're great now with a unique format, independent, non-commercial, whatever the other stations play in terms of music. We don't play it, because it's already popular. We play the artists who want to stay independent for their own artistic integrity, and because they're closed out, artificially, unfairly closed out of the music business in this country. The big companies, and there's only three of them now worldwide, the big music companies, three big ones, control over 80% of what gets played, what gets heard, distributed around the world, and pretty much our artists are not associated with any of them because, well, those companies wouldn't let them because they're making profits on the roster they already have, which is smaller than ever. But they found out with a smaller roster of music artists that they can put more advertising, we call it marketing money, into it, and they can make even more profit. If they had more people, they just have more salaries to pay. So starting about 30 years ago, they decided, let's not have so many good, okay, there's a lot of great artists out there, great music that could be heard, but we don't want that to happen because it'll cost us too much money to compete. So we'll keep buying out small companies, we'll merge them into ours, so we almost totally control the music industry worldwide with three companies, and we'll be fat and happy. But do they wonder why that even not only CD sales, but digital downloads of music are declining these days worldwide? It's because the music is all the same. It's not fresh. It's not exciting. Because it's the same artist and the same styles. Don't take any chances, folks, on a new artist with new kinds of music, because people might not like it. And then we won't have that constant cash flow. This is the kind of way that the greediest of the big music executives think and how they act. Here at WHFR, we play the artists that we think are equal to or better than what's already popular. Think about that. And our talk shows, well, if you've been listening to WHFR Journal, you know we don't do things the way that anybody else does. We're more local than any other radio station news show in Detroit, and we also have opinions that we try to be fair with, but we have opinions. Okay. Let's see, just jumping around here, approaching about halfway in our hour. Oh, Detroit, yeah, I had this last week. Detroit has been ranked the 11th unhealthiest city in America. Somebody said, aren't we the most obese city? Yeah, we're not doing too well in that regard either. But this is several different criteria, and I'm sorry I don't know. To be fair, you should know what criteria they use. This comes from a website called betterdoctor.com, and that's supposedly a free consumer healthcare tool that makes it easy to find a great doctor. Well, they evaluated cities across the U.S., did this study, based on important health criteria such as exercise rates, the percentage of highly rated doctors, highly rated by whom? That's what I want to know, by themselves, and the number of residents with health insurance in each city. So obviously the cities with the lowest economic, with the largest population of lower economic people, they will place, they have less access to health care. They can't afford much health care, if any. And if they're out of work, they can't get any from their employer. And so, of course, the poorest cities in the United States, to use the term in general, are going to have the poorest rating. They will become automatically the most more unhealthy in this particular ranking system. But Detroit is 40th out of the 70 major cities in the U.S. in terms of how healthy are they. So 40th, that's not good. That means there's 39 that are more healthy by this criteria, all of which I don't know and can't share with you. And to be fair, a critical thinking type college-educated person should know all the criteria and how weighted the criteria are. But nonetheless, might mean something. The healthiest cities, by their study, is Boston, Massachusetts. Out of a 100-point scale, they got almost 75. Number two, at 73, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Number three, surprisingly, Washington, D.C. But remember, there's a lot of rich people there. Senators, congressmen, people working for the government. And guess what? They get free health care. Yeah. So that helps, right? And good doctors? Yeah, a lot of rich people are there. Of course they got good doctors in Washington, D.C. Of course they do. Mm-hmm. After Washington, D.C., that's 72 points. San Francisco gets 66 points. Then Hartford, Connecticut. It's a home of an insurance company that I use. I won't say for what, but Hartford. Pittsburgh, then. Boy, that used to be heavily polluted, all the industry, the factories there. Doing pretty well now, I guess. If that's part of the criteria, I don't know. They're at 60 points. And we'll jump down to, let's see, some of my favorite city. Well, my favorite city, Austin, Texas, which is number one in a study I'm going to also share with you this hour on a different kind of criteria. They're number 18 at 53.4. And I don't quite understand that, except their city is very large. It's like, if Detroit became all of Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb County, that's Austin, Texas, okay? And, of course, that's really good because they're able to have consistent transportation, metro transit for all their people because there's one company, Austin, Texas City, that controls that whole area. And so that's why it can be so good for that reason. Why it's only 18th out of 70, I guess that's not bad, though. Chicago, Illinois, is 23rd, but remember, Chicago has a lot of poor people. Not downtown, true, but the city of Chicago goes far south and north, and there's a lot of average and below average economic level suburb-like areas, neighborhoods within the city of Chicago. New York is 24th. Again, a lot of poor people there. Not quite as many as before because these areas keep getting gentrified and they push poor people out for the sake of luxury apartments and condos. And of course, they've got some of the richest people in the world living there who can well afford the best health care and therefore the best doctors want to be near those very rich people so they can get their salaries paid. The top 25 least healthy cities by the survey from BetterDoctor.com, number one, Memphis, Tennessee, with only 15 points out of 100. A lot of poor people in Memphis, believe me. San Antonio, I was surprised about. They're the fourth least healthy city in Texas because I've been there. And, yeah, they have a lot of poor neighborhoods. And certainly Texas doesn't do anything for them in general. But it's pretty nice. I mean, it's nice and clean, and I thought it looks like a good place to live. But there's some of the criteria. Exercise rates. I don't know. Are people lazy in San Antonio? Taking a long Spanish-style luncheon or siesta or something? I don't know. Sounds good to me, though. New Orleans is not very healthy. Number eight in the worst of the least healthy cities by the study. Detroit is 11th, 34 points out of 100. Not too good. Although a lot of you might think about Phoenix. Phoenix is 13th least healthy, 35 points, just one more point better than Detroit on this study. And a lot of people, oh, Phoenix, that's wonderful. Have you been there recently? The air is so polluted, you don't want to jog outside or exercise. Now, there's a lot of rich people there, a lot of rich communities around there, but I bet there's a lot of poor people too. But it's a suburban sprawl that's really out of control. That's Phoenix, in my humble opinion, of course. Cleveland, Ohio, nearest to us here, it's 23rd, and it's way up there at 43 points, so... not too many of us down there below 20 like Detroit is. Well, no, Detroit is 34, I said. Yeah. So there you go. They also talk about eating habits, chronic health problems, the number of those, and disease rates, access to parks and recreational activities, and even more that, again, we didn't cover here. That's that little study. So get healthy, folks. Exercise. Get your health care in shape. And get those good doctors. If you can afford them. Okay. Moving on then. Let's see. It was reported on the 21st of January in pressingguide.com. Didn't get a chance to mention it here that the Adobe Hotel, I think the sign is still out front. It originally was the Hyatt Regency here in Dearborn, next to Fairlane Town Center, you know. It has now been, of course... reassigned to a new owner, I believe, and also they're trying to find a new hotel management chain to run it. See, they have an owner, and then they have a management chain, like Hyatt Regency or whatever, that actually takes care of business and runs it and gives a percent to the person that owns it. Yeah, and here we go. Found the article. Four national brands in the running. Right now, and by the way, that's a 772-room hotel at Hyatt Regency. So in December, they announced that the four that are in the running include Marriott International. Wouldn't that be nice to have a big brand name there, Marriott International? Best Western International. And I've stayed at many Best Western hotels worldwide. Each is a little bit different because it's unique to the owner, the franchise owner. They let a great deal of variation go with Best Western hotels. And I've always enjoyed my stays at a wide variety of Best Western hotels. Not an endorsement here of anyone in particular, but Wyndham Worldwide. Wyndham is a big name. And Choice Hotels International, they represent many different sub-brands. I'm not sure which one would come to us. Also, Intercontinental Hotels Group. Again, that's... a group, of course, that actually has some more recognizable brands under them. I think either Choice or Intercontinental has like Motel 6. Well, they won't make a Motel 6 out of the Hyatt Regency, but I'm just saying that there are brand names underneath. Yep. Okay. So see if we get a big name management company, and they may already be in place now, but at the end of January, it hasn't been announced yet officially, I guess, who's going to take over that. Okay, boy, getting a lot of stories in here. How about those big storms? You love them, huh? And some of you out there still climate deniers, climate change deniers? Do you feel that bad storm there was just an example of how the climate is not getting warmer? Well, first of all, folks, here's a story from New York Times from January 17th. 2014, the whole year, breaks the heat record. Totally challenging. They call them skeptics. I call them deniers. Because a skeptic has rational reasons. A denier has no good reason whatsoever. They just feel it's not right. Seriously. Well, that can't be right. That doesn't seem right. So there is a campaign on that the major media should not ever use the term skeptic in this for these kinds of people. Scientists clearly have pointed out, and they keep doing study after study after study, and here it is. Last year was the hottest on Earth since record-keeping began in 1880. underscoring warnings about the risks of runaway greenhouse gas emissions and undermining claims by climate change contrarians that global warming had somehow stopped. Extreme heat blanketed Alaska and much of the western United States last year. Records were set across large areas of every inhabited continent, and the ocean surface was unusually warm virtually everywhere except near Antarctica, the scientists say. So in the annals of climatology, 2014 surpassed 2010 as the warmest year. The 10 warmest years have all occurred since 1997, a reflection of the relentless planetary warming that scientists say is a consequence of human activity and poses profound long-term risk to civilization. That's us, supposedly, folks, if you are civilized. And even nature. And without nature, I don't think we can be very civilized for very long, folks. So that's my end. Continuing the quote, from Michael Frelich, who is Director of Earth Sciences at NASA, our National Space Administration. Climate change is perhaps the major challenge of our generation, because NASA tracks global temperatures. Of the large land areas where many people live, only the eastern portion of the United States recorded below average temperatures in 2014. That's in sharp contrast to the unusual heat in the West. Some experts think the weather pattern that produced those American extremes is an indirect consequence of the release of greenhouse gases, though that is not proven. Several scientists said the most remarkable thing about the 2014 record was that it occurred in a year that did not feature a strong El Niño, which is a large-scale weather pattern in which the Pacific Ocean pumps an enormous amount of heat into the atmosphere. Skeptics of climate change have long argued that global warming stopped around 1998, when an unusually powerful El Niño produced the hottest year of the 20th century. Some politicians in Washington have seized on that claim to justify inaction on emissions. Carbon emissions, folks. But the temperature of 1998 is being surpassed every 4 or 5 years, and 2014 was the first time that happened without a significant El Niño. Gavin A. Schmidt, head of NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies in Manhattan, said the next strong El Niño would probably rout all records. Quote from him, obviously a single year, even if it is a record, cannot tell us much about climate trends. Oh, not from him. This is from Stefan Ramsdorf, head of Earth System Analysis at the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research in Germany. So he probably said this in German. But anyway, it's translated. He said, the single year information cannot tell us much about climate trends. However, the fact that the warmest years on record are 2014, 2010, and 2005 clearly indicates that global warming has not stopped in 1998, as some like to falsely claim. Yep. And from commondreams.com, where they have a great collection of essays from intelligent people from all over, scientists are clear. This came from January 27th. We could go Tuesday. Scientists are clear. Big winter storms are influenced by a warming planet. Warmer oceans and atmosphere likely are contributing to the 2 to 3 feet of snowfall expected to blanket much of the Northeast, as it avoided New York City, of course, but they got that 2+ feet further north in the Northeast. This storm can be referred to as a nor'easter, I guess because it happens in the Northeast. The nor'easter expected to continue throughout the day as it moves along the New England coast has been described as historic, with many areas expecting as much as 3 feet of snow, and they got it. Such conditions come as no surprise to many climate scientists due to increasingly warm ocean and atmospheric temperatures as a result of human-driven climate change. Us. We did it. We caused it. Okay. A scientist told National Geographic, he's from the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. He's a climate scientist. He said, big snowfall, big rainstorms. We've been seeing this for years. More very large events are becoming more common. And that's what you would expect with climate change, particularly in the Northeast. As National Geographic explains, the Northeast United States is the, quote, big winner in the extreme precipitation sweepstakes. Oh, yeah. Whoop-de-doo. Let's celebrate. Dealt out by global warming. unquote. Severe blizzards such as the one pounding the region on last Tuesday, this last Tuesday, and rainstorms have increased by more than 70% in the past six decades in the Northeast. So I'm glad I'm here in Michigan, where we didn't get anywhere near that much. And the article goes on. But it's pretty clear, folks. You can't deny that climate change is the fault of human beings and our so-called civilizations. It also means that we can avoid the severe problems, which could result in catastrophe for all of us. There's an article in New York Times. It's an editorial opinion back Sunday, January 17th. Is climate disaster inevitable? It's from an Adam Frank is his name. And he's an astrophysics professor at the University of Rochester, by the way. And his conclusion is, by studying sustainability as a generic astrobiological problem, we can understand if the challenge we face will be like threading a needle or crossing a wide valley. Answering this question demands a far deeper understanding of how planets respond to the kind of stresses energy-intensive species, like us, place on them. It's an approach no different from that of doctors using different kinds of animals and their molecular biology to discover cures for human disease. With this perspective, we also gain an essential truth. We are one form of life on one planet in a universe of countless planets. Through hard-won scientific gains, we've begun discovering the patterns and laws governing planets together with the life they host. 10,000 years from now, the Democrats and Republicans and their squabbles over climate change will be long gone. But the laws of planets and life we're now revealing won't have changed. Not on this world or any other. Adam Frank in New York Times Sunday Review from a week or so ago. Here's a comment from Jim Hightower. Yep.
Group now known disparagingly as Ultra Lawn People. High, as everyone called him, was dedicated body and soul to the Sisyphean task of trying to maintain a lawn full of lush St. Augustine grass in hot, dry Texas. He planted, watered, fertilized, watered, mowed, watered, fought bugs and brown patch, watered, replanted, watered, ad nauseum. Some years he won. In other years, nature rolled him. High departed his lawn and this earth well before climate change turned Texas from merely hot and dry into scorched and parched. I know he would have denied it at first, but I think even he would have finally given in to today's new reality. In our drought-ravaged Southwest, the lush lawn is dead, literally and ethically. From Texas to Southern California, city after city is adapting to nature. They're policing neighborhoods to impose big fines on excessive lawn watering, paying homeowners and businesses to rip out grass and replace it with desertscapes, and even outlawing grass yards and new developments. And it's working. A pioneering 2003 turf removal rebate program in Las Vegas, for example, has now pulled 165 million feet of thirsty lawn grass out of the area, saved more than 9 billion gallons of water, and cut water use by a third, even as the population has mushroomed. This is Jim Hightower saying, such an effort would have been treated as heresy only a decade ago, but now it's simply considered the right thing to do. This is not merely an environmental adjustment, but a fundamental ethical shift, especially among younger people. The idea that green lawns are exercises in ecological narcissism has taken root in this arid and politically conservative region, demonstrating that conservatism really can be about conserving.
And back to the WHFR Journal. I'm fine. Just had to take a little sip of my tea here. Kind of run out of lubrication for my throat after going crazy for 40 minutes. My goodness. But yeah, the Southwest, that was the segue, folks. They're drying up. Austin, Texas, one of my favorite cities, and the number one city in the United States by another study that I told you I was going to mention. This is from Pergem, which is a group of public-spirited researchers that was formed by Ralph Nader, actually, 30 years ago. He's not associated with the group anymore, but their latest massive study, really, is transportation. How are various cities around the U.S. Coming up with new ideas for mass transit? You know, that would be an answer to climate change, folks, is to find a less polluting way to get around and a more reliable one. Everybody's talking on the major media about Mr. Robertson, who I guess has to take a bus and then walks 21 miles each way to his job in Rochester Hills. He lives in Detroit, I believe. Well, it raises the question, why don't we have some metro transit system? If he lived in Austin, Texas, that kind of distance, he'd just take a bus. One or two, not 28, because it's all one transit system. And there's a bus on almost every street and every street corner, almost all the way through the night and on weekends. And last time I was there, a full day pass for a visitor is $1.25 a day. As many places as you want to ride, day and night, $1.25. Just get on and off. Oh, my gosh. Is that a service to the people of Austin who can't afford a car or don't want a car? Absolutely. Reliable. Safe. Metro area. Constant transportation. Detroit, we've got DDOT, the Detroit Department of Transportation, and you know how great their buses are and how many are left and how frequent they run and how dependable they are. And then there's smart buses, which we voted to go with again. But, you know, some communities, some cities can say, we don't want them because our people here don't want to ride them. And so smart buses don't go everywhere. You got to call them up, and some communities don't want them. And so that's just hit and miss. That's helps. But not if your community can't afford them and doesn't want them, then it won't even be available for you. So this was talked about on American Black Journal, in fact, about a week or so ago. And that's a TV program on Channel 56, and it was run on WDET this morning. In fact, they use the audio portion every Friday morning from 9:30 to 10. Anyway, yeah, we've got a lousy metro transit system. And I think it would really be beneficial if Mr. Robertson's situation actually gets some people to make a change here. But the change is we need a larger city of Detroit. We need consolidation of these services. We need to turn Wayne, Macomb, and Oakland County, and this is according to every urban planning specialist I've ever talked to, and they can point to all the cities around the country, including Austin, that have done this. You get a big area, you incorporate it under one umbrella, and you get all the services working together, organized. All the metro transit, all the waste pickup, all the road clearing and road repairing. Everybody shares the burden. Why do you think Wayne County has just been announced a day or two ago that it's deeply in debt? It's broke. And it may need an emergency financial manager, which will do what? They'll cut all the services even more. Compared to Oakland County, good old Brooks Patterson gave his State of the County address a couple days ago. They're going to cut the millage rate there because they're making so much money from the rich people out there anyway and all the businesses located there. They don't need all of it, which is amazing to me. You really mean, or that any politician could actually say, we're going to cut the rate because we're already doing just fine. But he thinks at least until 2020, and I'm not sure what's happening then, but they won't need the extra millage. Of course, he's running for re-election in 2016, he announced, so he wants to, this is really good PR. That, well, you know, I'm going to run one more time. I know I'm getting old, but, you know, I'll run one more time, and then whoever follows after me, well, they may be really in trouble, but I won't raise taxes. In fact, I'm going to reduce them. So, yeah, Oakland County residents, and Macomb for that matter, they don't want to pay extra money to, if they join in with Wayne County, to fix up Wayne County and or Detroit. You know, but is that important? Is that totally necessary? Oh, yeah, it is. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep. That would be an answer to the problem. You don't need those three counties. Maybe you need one county if you got to do it that way. But remember last week I've been saying it's crazy that we have city-maintained roads. We got county-maintained roads. We don't know who is doing which one, who to complain about, or who's going broke first. You know, all the roads should be repaired by the same big company to the same extent. You want to have one bridge that's going to fall down and the other one's going to be repaired because it's out in Oakland County? That's not quite right. Especially for, I mean, any of us just live in a small area. We don't want to take advantage of all the good things happening in the whole Detroit metro area. We need to be a unified metropolitan community. That's my humble opinion and the opinion of almost every rational researcher on urban planning and all the great cities that are growing and doing a great job around the country have followed the same plan. But, of course, not us. No. And, that's too big an idea. So where do we fall in this study that Austin, Texas came out number one, top cities with abundant choices, 11 different kinds of transportation services, and 18 different providers, just to give a little competition there. Okay? I mean, they've got metro trains running downtown, fast trains that go downtown and north, two different directions. They've got all those buses constantly going everywhere, and you can buy the same ticket and transfer from one to the other. Of course, they've got taxis and airport transportation. Five different ways to use mass transit to get from the airport, not just taxis like we have at Metro Airport here. It's crazy. I think we're one of the very few where you can't get a decent, low-cost way to get from the major city nearby to the major airport. It's a crime. It's a shame. It's a scam. It is. That's the way Wayne County set it up, so they can make the biggest profit and give the contract just to one company for the taxis. Ooh, that's consistency. That guarantees consistency. Yeah, right. By the way, the second top city with abundant transportation choices, for those of you who like to move there, San Francisco, and then Washington, D.C. Yep. And then tied for fourth place, three cities, Boston, Los Angeles, New York City. Well, you know, New York got metro, and they've got taxis and a lot of public transportation. You don't need a car in New York. In fact, good luck trying to drive a car in New York. You know. And since fourth was tied with three people, the next open category is Portland, and they're seventh. And then there was a tie, four cities tied for eighth, Denver, Colorado, Minneapolis again. Remember Minneapolis, one of the healthiest. Austin was 18th healthiest, by the way. San Diego, California, and then Seattle, Washington. And where is Detroit on that? Yeah, we're 40th out of 70. Because we don't really have any transportation system for average people. If you don't have a car, you're going to get nowhere in Detroit. Thank you very much. The rich get richer and blah, blah, blah. Okay. Let's see here now. Where are we going to go? Okay, we have a special program coming up. I don't think it's been announced before. We don't have a pre-recorded spot for it yet, but we will. We're going to be broadcasting the Homelessness Marathon. That's a 17th annual broadcast. We got involved a few years ago when they came to Detroit, and we were actually helping them with their broadcast down at the Wayne State University Cass Corridor area. Freezing cold night. We spent a lot of our staff was down there helping not only the broadcast, but some of the homeless facilities too that night. Even the Jeremy Alderson and his team, they actually had their main broadcast microphone booth outside in Michigan winter. It was really, really scary, let me tell you. Because it was so cold. Well, this year they're being a little smarter with the origination is from Sarasota, Florida. But you know, in the warmer climates, guess what? There's more homelessness. Well, I wanted to bring your attention. First of all, we're going to do that. And when is it going to happen? It's going to be Tuesday, the 17th of this month, beginning at 7 p.m. And we don't know exactly how long we're going to be able to stay with them because we're trying to check our DJ staff to see if people want to be here live during the night. To see if we can get our volunteers to give up a night's sleep for the cause. We're not trying to raise money, but just awareness. And I wanted to relate this to a big story out in Wayne County. No hope for that here. Washtenaw County is going to be one of several Michigan communities included in the Zero 2016 campaign. And what is that? Well, Washtenaw was selected as one of a handful of Michigan metro areas in 71 communities throughout the country to participate in the effort to eliminate veteran and chronic homelessness by the end of 2016. Okay? And it can be done. And this, I've listened to these broadcasts and have studied the homelessness issue for the last several years. It doesn't take that much to eliminate all homelessness, and especially in places where it's so darn cold, you can't live on the streets here. You can't survive. And we're not serving the cause very well. But the national campaign known as Zero 2016 takes a systematic approach to not only counting those experiences, those experiencing homelessness during the federally mandated annual point in time count, but by cataloging and then tracking individuals. And from there, you can actually move ahead to hopefully eliminate the problem. Final quick story here, because Highway 61 is coming up very quickly. Oh, we're almost right on top of it. Joanne is in the house, and she is picking her first tracks as I speak here right now. And a special guest came with her. I'm not sure he's going to talk on the air today, but we invite him to. Detroit Blues Society President Steve Subiak is here too. But let me sneak this in. Remember we talked back a while about the lame duck session, how somebody was going to, Republicans were going to try to get us to change from a one vote takes all state, that is majority vote takes all the electoral votes. Because remember, it's electoral votes that actually choose the president of the United States. So if we had one vote more for the Democratic candidate, let's say, in Michigan, then all the electoral votes, all the electors sent, would have to vote for that person, at least on the first ballot, okay? And they choose the president. Well, Nebraska and Maine are two states that don't have that. Yeah, they're the only ones that do it percentage-wise. But guess what? And the Republican state, too, they're choosing to give it up for the one vote takes all. That is, the majority takes all the electoral votes. Crazy, huh? So there's actually reasons why our Republicans in Michigan maybe shouldn't go for that, you know, that proportionate thing, because, Nebraska's not going to, it looks like they might go back the other direction. So I think Republicans ought to get their act straight and talk to each other in terms of what their program should be. Well, thank you for listening very much to the new WHFR Journal today. We'll be back again next Friday the 13th. It'll be a great, happy, lucky day, I'm sure, for all of us. If it isn't, not my fault. Remember, I'm trying to be positive here. Jay Kornick saying bye for now, and take care out there, and we will be talking to you soon. And now it's Highway 61, the best in the blues, starting right this moment.